Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 5th of August. It is a glorious start to our month, and we thank you very much for being with us. Good morning, all. How is everyone assembled in the studio this morning?
How's yourself, Joe?
I'm fine, but I asked the question.
What? Oh. I'm pretty good.
Good, excellent.
Got out of bed without any pain this morning.
Oh, good for
you. I'm sure you wanted to know that.
Congrats. Well, yes, that is good. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Newsman Ray Graff is here, and our commentator and activist Libby Post joins us this morning as well. Good morning, Libby.
Hi, nice to be back in more than one way, that's for sure.
Whoa.
You got a doppelganger? What are you talking about?
Well, she was out traveling.
I was traveling. And I got bumped. I only bought my ticket 6 weeks ago.
Oh.
And I got bumped from Durango at Colorado, where there's like, you know,
no other flights.
Two or three stagecoaches a day. And
hey,
that's
now,
about
hey.
It.
How do they do that when they don't
book? Oh, they're
you?
Allowed to. They're allowed to overbook by 15%.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And
I
so
no
this
idea.
One flight was booked, you know, and I was like, I need to get home. And so
Don't they do that thing where they pay people?
Oh, yes. I have a check in my pocket for close to $600.
I'm surprised we didn't send the company jet to get you.
Yeah, right. I mean, well, there is that. I was expecting something, but, you know.
By Saturday afternoon, I was worried that she wasn't going to make it. We were going to call in the big guns.
Yeah. Send out the blimp.
Yeah. No, I got home. I was supposed to get home Thursday at 6:30. I got home Friday 9:30 in the morning.
And I got a email, and I'm back. And I was like, well, thank God. We're good to go.
Thanks
to
God.
So here we go.
Praise.
Well, you know, talk about traveling and talk about, you know, concerns in regards to travel and to terror. And this story broke over the weekend and late Friday, actually, where it was disclosed that there were really ominous warnings about intelligence chatter, which was actually revealed, I guess, to officials on Thursday. And then an announcement was made on Friday. 19 American diplomatic outposts across the Middle East and North America remain closed this week, the State Department said Sunday, despite what officials said was really no new information about terrorist plots that they believe are in the works. However, there have been reports that they got very specific chatter and very specific information about what has been called a quote-unquote big event. And with that information, they decided to move forward in telling people to be on the lookout. I asked the panel, I asked the group assembled, of what do you think we are supposed to do with that information? Because that's one of those things where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, right? If you don't tell people that there's trouble lurking and something happens, then you're screwed. Mm-hmm. If you then tell them that something is going to happen and then something doesn't happen, are you scaring the public?
And there's a certain amount of cynicism that develops here. I had a letter from a fellow. I don't really agree with him. I'll just preface this, but who said, this is like the battleship of Maine. You know, the NSA is in real trouble. People want to, you know, make sure that it's not abusing American civil liberties. And all of a sudden, this announcement, you know, comes out. Well, I think you got to believe them if they say it. My personal take on this is that I don't like to travel. And there was a sort of a travel advisory that came out there,
not
too.
Not sort of. There was. Yeah,
there was a travel advisory.
Don't leave Durango. Yeah,
and Roselle and I are slated to take a little bit of an international vacation in November for a week. And I said, that's it, Roselle. We're not going.
There you go.
Well, and she said, we are going.
You know, I had the same cynical thought of, well, this could be seen as a setup, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
To show, well, what we're doing is really important. But I have two axioms. Do it and then ask for forgiveness.
Right.
Right? And it's better to be safe than sorry. And I don't have a problem with what they've done. And, you know, things are pretty hot and in those parts of the world, and we need to protect our folks.
And let me put it another way. Is there anybody alive that doesn't think that there are bad people out there who want to do what they did on 9/11?
Absolutely.
There are.
There are. There are plenty of them.
And we know it, and they say so.
Right.
There is, in Mark Mazzetti's article in the New York Times this morning, there is this paragraph, which I will read. Such is the strange wait-and-see climate surrounding a threat that appears to be both specific and maddeningly
Maddeningly.
Don
Maddeningly fake.
That's right. Thank you very much. Wow. It worked well in rehearsal.
Yes.
American officials say that they are confident that they have intercepted electronic communications discussing attacks in the coming days, but they have no clear information about where they should try to defend against them. So now what do you do?
Well, why don't you go to the next two paragraphs from Mr. Mazzetti, where he quotes Peter King, who says, hey, listen, there's no guarantee at all. It could basically be in Europe, could be in the U.S., could be combined, could be, you know, in the Middle East. So anywhere.
And here's what
Santa's workshop.
Here's what's so maddeningly about this thing. I'll tell you what it is.
Yes.
And that is that we are facing, you know, developing techniques. I mean, I read in the paper this weekend about at one point they got a guy who had a bomb surgically put into his body.
Yeah.
You know, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is undetectable by going through, from my understanding.
If they
right?
use plastic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, no. I mean, if you go through
the
high end ones where they do
the whirling thing.
What's this whirling thing? What do you mean?
At the airport.
No, I understand that you're at the airport.
You go through security. You go into a machine. You put your arms up, and the whirly thing goes
like an MRI.
Right,
I don't fly too much, so I've never seen this.
Oh yeah.
You couldn't get in.
Yeah.
Oh, ow.
Oh, you
it
could.
It shows my new titanium knee, but it's in the right place. So it's all according where they're going to put the bomb. I mean, you know, you could say, oh, I've got a new knee, and then it's behind the kneecap or something like that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is what pains me is I have to agree with Peter King. That's one thing. But,
yeah.
You know.
I hear you.
But the other thing is Alan's right. If people are hell-bent on destruction, they're going to do it, and they're going to do it however they want to do it.
What is extraordinary is that we keep catching these other guys. You know, you got to assume at some point they're going to bring it off.
Well, and the other thing, too, is does, and we don't know this. I guess we'll never know this. Although we've heard stories about this since 9/11, certainly, that making a proclamation like this, making an announcement like this, thwarts the crime.
If you say I'm planning
a huge event and I'm going to do this big thing and say it's all accurate, and then you get on and say, look, world beware, we're waiting for this to happen, and then suddenly you say, all right, maybe we...
But if you're watching this on video, you know, you go to WMC.org and say, watch this now. What do you say? Watch this now, Ray?
That'll work.
Yeah.
Open Sesame.
Whatever.
You
can watch this. And then Ray was taking his finger and sort of shaking it at Joe. It's interesting.
Well,
what was that?
I think it was
I was going to say was, yes, I was agreeing. When I shake it at you, it means I disagree. When I shake it at Joe, I mean, you're on to something.
And what about when you shake it at me, honey?
Well, I'm just going to stand. You know, you got jet lag. I'm going to stand over here.
Okay,
you're fine. So anyway, I think...
Can you say honey on the air? I don't...
Yeah, it's better.
That's
better.
Fine.
It's not one of those seven words you can't say.
Yeah, and those are the ones she says off mic. So, no, what I was going to say was, it seems to me that we send a message to them by doing this, by boldly closing all the embassies and loudly doing that. We say, look, we're on to you. And it's a double-edged sword. One, we have broken this communication technique that you use. But two, hey, you better keep silent because we are listening. And we are on to you. So if, in fact, there was something in the planning, they now know that we know that they know that we know.
But yeah, that's right. But I think, on the other hand, it just may challenge them to make them more clever.
Right. I think they'll find another way of communicating.
Oh,
right.
I have no doubt about that. Right. But as far as whatever was going to happen on that particular day, how do we define, have we come up with a universal definition of chatter? Of what exactly
well, I think
that?
If you listen to the first hour of this, podcast,
I was just about to say it's what we're doing now.
Well, I love the old military channel 210 on the
I was watching that yesterday.
Yeah, I love it because it does the complete history of World War II and then does it over. And from my perspective, I love it because it tells you all about the encryption machines.
Yeah,
and,
did you see that yesterday? The Enigma.
I see it every day.
World War II in color. Great show.
I see it every day. And I've seen it again and again and again. I'm going to keep on watching until I get it right.
Yeah.
But it does talk about all this chatter and how World War II was won by
great point.
Much part of that.
And to Joe's point, Winston Churchill was very careful not to act on anything they got because they had broken Enigma in 1940 without a subterfuge. In other words, they would only act on the intelligence if they could plausibly say we got this intelligence from somewhere else to keep the Germans from knowing.
Yeah, yeah.
So at what point do you open the embassies again? I mean, when is the all clear, I guess? When you have something
If they had the color code still, we would know that.
I was going to ask about the color code. You know, there's no color code
I don't think
now.
There's ever an all clear anymore.
Good point, Libby.
I don't think they'll ever be an
all
clear.
Well, you have to open them again at
some
point.
You do have to open them, but that doesn't mean there's an all clear. I think that there's always going to be this heightened sense of threat for the foreseeable future.
But my
and
question
they'll open them up when the chatter dies down.
But what happens when you, I don't want to step on Joe here, but what happens when
you go
to a foreign country and lose your passport?
Right. Well, there is that. All the things that Americans need when the embassies are closed. What happens when you need some safe haven?
You
know, intervention. It's true. Yeah. It's true. You are leaving those folks high and dry.
My point, right, don't go. Which was the warning. That was the warning of unnecessary travel. But also, my point being, if you have something that is vague, if you have something that is not pinpoint clear and accurate as to what is going to happen, then what is your criteria then in reopening and say, okay, we're good now?
I think that's one of those classified documents that Edward Snowden might have.
We're going to talk about him in just a second.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
But you know, Joe, if you had the pinpoint information, then you wouldn't have to say a word. You'd just go take care of it.
Well, right.
So
right, but what I'm saying is without it, and assuming you don't have it, at what point then are you sending the message by closing for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, and then you reopen, everything's fine? It's an interesting, you're sending as much a signal by reopening as you are by closing, I think.
Well, Joe, but part of it is what you said so perceptively before. This is CYA if there ever was.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, what could be happening is they take the 4 or 5 days and bolster their internal security, and so that they feel more secure opening up. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen that we don't know.
Well, I mean, what do they mean by opening up? There's still personnel
still
on the ground
right.
in every one.
Yeah,
I mean,
consular stuff.
Yeah,
right. And there's still guards, and there's still jersey bumpers, and there's all kinds of things.
And yet.
Yeah.
And yet,
you know, people can get through.
Yeah. Benghazi, there's so much that we have seen that can happen. If somebody's willing to kill themselves,
right.
Which is what this is all about.
That's right.
Then you got to figure somebody's going to succeed.
That's right.
There is, I want to move on to another story in just a moment, take a break. But no, no, no.
No, that's good.
No. Did you have a point?
No, no.
Because I just want to
move right along.
Thing.
It's your show.
It's our show.
That's fine.
You know, Ray, don't be difficult.
You know what's Monday?
I've been saying that for years, but nobody ever sides with me. They always write me letters saying you're mean to Ray.
Okay, so my question was before we move on was, what do we do? Did you do what I just think you did?
I did. And watch it. You could have watched that gesture on video if you're watching at WAMC.org.
But he did it with the wrong finger.
Yeah, yeah. See, when he points to me, he uses his index finger. When
he's
he
scared
to
of you.
My question is the politics of this. So obviously you have both Democrats and Republicans tripping over themselves to be on the Sunday talk shows yesterday to say that this was justified.
Yeah.
And again, that's CYA, right?
Well, sure. And you can just imagine the schnook who says it's all a bunch of hokum, and then the thing happens, and then they're in bad shape. This throughout history, we've seen this happen before.
Ray, before we move on, do you have any final thoughts?
Oh, I thought we were
issue?
In the break.
No,
I'm good.
Okay, excellent. We are going to go to a break. When we come back, we will talk about other issues, including Russia granting Edward Snowden, asylum for a year. We'll talk about that story and others coming up next right here on the Roundtable.
Support comes from singer-songwriter Laura Wetzler, original folk rock, world beat Jewish music, and American classics. 4 p.m. Sunday, September 22nd at North Hall, Huntington, Massachusetts. LauraWetzler.com. Kenco Work and Play Outfitters, Route 28, Kingston. Locally owned outdoor outfitters supporting kayaking, hiking, archery, fly fishing, and more in the Hudson Valley since 1982. atkenco.com. And Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. CurranCompliance.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff, and Libby Post make up our panel, and of course you do too. We would love to hear from you. All you have to do is email us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Another story that broke over the weekend while we were away, and that is Russia granting Edward Snowden temporary asylum and allowing him to walk free out of a Moscow airport despite the risk of a breach in relations with the United States. And, of course, this was a major issue discussed over the weekend as far as the political and the what implications this would have as far as the relationship between these two countries. Russia's decision obviously infuriated American officials. It ended 5 weeks of legal limbo for Edward Snowden, the former intelligence analyst wanted by the U.S. for leaking details of the NSA's surveillance programs, and certainly opened a new phase of his legal and political journey. So the question is, if you're the White House, do you have a right to be infuriated, because there are still many people who are making this guy out to be a hero? Alan, what do you think?
I was afraid you were going to call on me.
Libby, what do you think?
No. In all honesty, Joe, this is a tough one for exactly the reason you just said, and that is that many people in this country think it was good, that what Snowden did was good. There are many people who think it was bad. But, of course, when you see this, you see Obama walking a tightrope. I'm trying to put myself into Obama's head. And, by the way, to Putin's head. Now, Putin, I think, is fairly clear. This makes him more popular with his group for standing up, with his own demographics, for standing up to the president and to the mean old United States, which we now keep hearing is the only superpower left in the world. And so he gets a lot of credit for doing this. He also is being sort of careful, covering his own behind, saying things like, they're saying to him, you can't be embarrassing the United States. It's only for a year, and you may be able to go to another country from here. But from Obama's point of view, if he steps one way, he looks weak. If he steps the other way, there will be people in this country who think, what are you wasting your time on this?
Libby, what do you think?
Well, I think if Edward Snowden's name was Edvard Snowdensky, and he did this.
It may
this,
have been.
And he, well, this is true, when somebody came over on the boat, and he was a Russian citizen and he did this, he would be in the gulag already.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Without
and
question.
So, you know, we know that the Russians could give anybody's butt about human rights. And this is all political. It's all grandstanding on Putin's part because he really is a saber rattler and he really is a macho.
He's a KGB former spy.
Right. I mean, he's no better than, any of the other guys. And I just think that, what Snowden did, I have to say, I think it was wrong. Mm-hmm. I also come from the perspective of, they want to listen to my phone calls. I don't have anything to hide, and I know they're not really listening to my calls. I understand how this whole algorithm works. you know.
You don't know what they're doing.
But I'd rather be, as I said before, I'd rather be safe than sorry. You know, at 55, I mean, maybe 30 years ago, I would have been a little more cavalier.
When you were in my class.
Right, and I was in your class.
You
I
were
probably,
much more.
I was much more,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so,
you know,
so,
but
yeah.
now I'm a little older, a little wiser.
Yeah,
and,
but I had to take it when you were younger.
Yes, you did. And so did a number of other people. But look what it did for you. Look how much stronger it made you.
Yeah, I think you both came out winners of that.
Yeah, there's not a big problem. But anyway, you know, I think it is a very difficult situation for Obama. I think, you know, there are a lot of things going on with Russia right now, not just this, that's fomenting here in this country around the Olympics and the treatment of gays and in Russia, and the fact that gay Olympians could get arrested when they go there because of the law that's on the books there now. So there's a lot of different issues for us to deal with Russia. And go ahead.
I want to go ahead, Ray.
Well, no, are we coming back to it?
Yeah, well, let's come. We want to come back to it because I want to talk about your issue, and then I also want to talk about this whole idea about whistleblowing and what that means and how that plays.
Okay.
We're going to take a break. We're going to hear NPR News, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about Edward Snowden and the asylum given in Russia. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff, Libby Post, and of course, we welcome your input as well, roundtable at WAMC.org. We have been discussing, as they say in the States, the Edward Snowden affair and the fact that Russia has granted Snowden a year's asylum. Ray, the point you wanted to make before we went to break.
Yeah, I mean, we can assume that every bit of secret data, whatever he had, was compromised minute one. So that's off the table. What the interesting thing is the diplomatic, what's going to happen? This dance now, there is this, you know, the White House was leaning toward a summit when they do the group of 20 nations. And now we're thinking about not doing it. And Putin is pretty much saying, well, what are you going to do now? You know, it takes two to tango. Are you going to have these talks? It goes back to the 60s and 70s, and it's a wonderful bit of nostalgia Mr. Putin is engaging in here.
And, you know, the ankle bone is attached somehow to the knee bone. And when you think about this, there's a lot going on. I mean, you know, there are these missiles all over the Soviet Union, which we have to be responsible for, and the old Soviet Union, I should say. There are many implications for not showing up at that thing. I mean, it seems to me you have to be bigger than that.
Or do you? I mean, the Immigration Department, the Kremlin spokesman said, listen, this decision to allow Snowden here for a year was not made by Putin. This was an Immigration Department decision.
Oh, sure.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, because he had to okay this.
Sure.
So, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to stand up and say, hey, this was ridiculous that you did this to us and didn't give him back. So what are we going to do?
I think there are many of our listeners who think it wasn't ridiculous. I mean, there are people who truly believe that Snowden is a national hero.
So as
was Assange.
And on that, do you think there is another level in the sense of, so here's this 30-year-old guy who has access to this information that perhaps he shouldn't have had access to. So is there another level of someone that he was answering to that it was being filtered down to that is either protecting him or has left him out in the cold? Do you think it is more complex than we even know?
It's complex. Years ago, I worked at a college, a small college, which I'm not going to say here. But we found a faculty member who was cheating.
Rhymes.
He was cheating. This guy, he had
in what way?
He falsified his entire vita.
Wow.
And had been there for a long time.
Oh, to get the job?
No, I don't know what to get.
Okay.
I just think he just did it.
What was his name?
Yeah, right. And so
did he have tenure?
And so, oh boy, did he ever have tenure?
Okay. All right.
That's the issue.
And pass judgment on everybody else, of course. The point is, he sort of resigned, was told to get out and to resign. And but at the point at which we said to him, you know, the faculty, you know, we're going to take action here. The union stepped up and said, no, he wasn't responsible. You were for not.
Catching him?
For not, you know, having more stringent things in place, which reminds me a little bit of what you guys were just talking about.
In what way?
Well, it seems to me there was a way, but I forgot.
Okay.
Well, no, meaning who is he answering to? Yeah. Is he...
Should the NSA have been...
Yeah, or, should there have been more of a block?
Well, and also, is he related to anyone else? I mean, is there someone that this information came from that he...
Sure.
That he was the whistleblower for as part of a larger
picture. Interesting.
Yeah.
You mean there's other people in the NSA who are discontent?
Yes. Hard to believe, I know. But it's a question mark. And then also, at what point, what protection does he get, and how much is he being left out to dry? And who are his allies now, other than WikiLeaks and the Russian government?
Well, you know.
Well, and people here, I'm sorry, Joe, I have to say this, who really believe you can't have democracy unless you have information.
Well, absolutely.
And therefore, this is information.
But how they help him as far as his actual situation.
Well, but except that I am sure that the White House is monitoring what public opinion is with this guy.
And the other part of it is that if there was somebody else at the NSA and Edward Snowden's the one who's taking the fall, you think he would keep that guy's or that girl's confidence? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think he would have blown the whistle on whoever his compatriots are, if there are any. So, you know, I think he probably acted alone. It's just that his bosses are in hot water because he had access to all.
What if he was a Russian mole all along?
Yeah, that's right. You never know. And as you taught me, you know, information is power. Yeah. So it's very, very heady stuff.
It is. It's quite a story, obviously, one that we will be covering as it drags on. And it's going to be quite a journey for Edward Snowden. And we'll be talking a lot more about it. I do want to move on to some other stories and go to the other story, which is, I mean, just one of those that I don't get. I just don't understand it, and maybe you all can help me. Plan by House leaders to cut $40 billion from the food stamp program, twice the amount of cuts proposed in a House bill that failed in June, threatens to derail efforts by the House and Senate to work together to complete the farm bill before agriculture programs expire on September 30th. What are we doing?
Well, I get it. I understand it perfectly, I think. What does that make me? No, but
astute.
Yeah, but think about this.
Astute. Okay, go ahead.
don't pass judgment. We haven't heard what he said yet.
All right,
yeah. The way to look at American politics, I've always thought, is that you have this voting middle. These are people who make the decisions, who vote people in and out of office. Sometimes they look at those above them and say, I'm going to be like them, that 1%. Mm-hmm. And I don't want anybody saying, you know, that I can't graduate to that group. And I aspire to what they have. And I don't want anybody taking anything away from them, because at some point I'm going to be them. OK, so therefore, now they also take a look down. And this is where, you know, the difference between our partisan politics happens, between the Republicans and the Democrats. If you look down, you see the people who have nothing. Does the middle class associate themselves with the nothing group? That's why you will never hear the word anymore, or seldom, poor from Democratic politicians. You will always hear middle class, middle class, middle class. Now, you go to the grocery store and you see somebody taking out food stamps and handing them to the clerk, you're going to get somebody in the middle class perhaps doing a slow burn and saying, I don't get that. Why are we doing this handout? And that is what is behind the Republicans cutting out, because what they see, in addition, you know, to saving a lot of money, they think, is also to say to the middle class, you see, there are those people who are getting what you don't get. And that is what I think is really going on here.
So I understand that we could have made, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but we could have made that case in June when we were talking about $20 billion in cuts.
Yes.
So now you turn around and you say, and you've already ticked off the Democrats, and you've already with $20 billion in cuts and drug tests and all rest to get the food stamps, and now you have House leaders who say, well, wait, $20 billion wasn't enough. We're going to make it $40 billion.
Now, what if I told you that they do polling too, and they want to find out whether the $20 billion worked, and if it worked according to the way that they're trying to organize things, then they try it at an increased level. Say, hey, that was neat. Now let's do some more. I think it's disgusting, by the way. I mean, look, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New York Times had it exactly right because they come from the same liberal, moderately liberal capitalistic group. They said, if you take everything away from people, then you really have dissonance.
Right.
So it's stupid. You got to give them something. You can't let them starve. If you can give them a mortgage, you give them a mortgage. Otherwise, you're really in trouble.
You know, they've turned the war on poverty into a war on people who live in poverty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's really what has happened here. And it's about not caring whatsoever about anybody who doesn't look like them, live like them. And it's stupid. It's stupid politics
That's
for the GOP to be doing this, because they're just going to further alienate what's becoming the majority in this country, which is non-white people.
That's brilliant. I mean, that's brilliant. That's exactly what happened with immigration and how come they lost the Hispanic vote. It's what's happened with women, with gays.
I don't get it.
If it doesn't work and you had an entire election over the 10% versus the 90% and it didn't work then, why are you trying it again now?
Because they didn't hear themselves. They didn't hear any of it.
No, see, it's different. In a presidential election, which we saw those things I just talked about, everybody votes. Everybody gets a vote. In the congressional elections, it's different because now you've organized your districts to help the majority party in each state and the rest. So it's not as if everybody gets a vote. And that's why if you get a 15 or 5% turnout in a congressional primary among the Republicans, they're always going to go the conservative way because that's the way they've organized themselves.
But it's one thing to, it's one thing to go that way in a congressional race. It's another thing for that to be the national policy of this national party.
But, Libby, but policy schmalacy. It's very short run thinking.
Oh, it is.
That's what.
It's
my
this,
behind
this
is going
thing.
To have to have a primary now. Am I going to be here next year or not? And I don't care if the world burns. I don't care if we don't have an intelligent carbon policy. I don't care if we have any of that. I am going to face a primary, and I can't let that guy outright wing me.
That's right. I get that.
I don't understand why this is connected to the farm bill and attached to it at all. This is this should be a separate debate about benefits. Meanwhile, the farmers have been hung out to dry for a long time. This farm bill needs to get done.
You could not be more right. You know, I do the congressional.
Wow, he's never said that.
No, I do the congressional corner with all of these congressmen, Democrats, Republicans, Owens, guys from Vermont who are significantly to the left, and they all make common cause on that farm bill because our farmers are being hurt. But it's all part of that same farm package.
But was it not attached initially by those liberal members of Congress?
No, I think the liberal members of Congress are fighting on the basis that it has to be part of our agricultural policy. Remember something, Ray.
Okay.
It is these guys.
Now you're pointing at me.
It's food.
I'm sorry. I'm sort of done.
Yeah, it is food.
It's food.
It's food. And that food is helping farmers. Think about that. When you supply people who don't have resources with food, that means the farmers are getting money.
Right.
Albeit not enough money because the middlemen get more, a lot more, but it helps the farmers.
So as we wrap up this conversation, these programs are due to expire in September. So what do you think is going to happen?
Me? I think
whoever would like
the politics have changed. The politics here are wicked, And I don't think these guys, the Boehner Cantor group, are going to give up on this. I don't think so.
So
I think they think it wins.
So then you turn around and you lose the farmers on top of everybody else. And
right.
I mean, not to mention the 40 billion that you're cutting out of food stamps, that you also then, without these programs being renewed for the farmers, do you take them off during the elections too?
That, my friend, is the classic question. That is the classic question. I don't know.
And then where do you go from
Remember,
there?
Remember, our farmers are different than the agribusiness farmers Midwest, for example.
Right.
That's where the big fight. I always ask this, the farm question, to our Congressional Corner people. And they always say it is not Republican versus Democrat in this case. It's sectional, geographical, the Northeast versus the Midwest, and that's where the
big
the
business
whole
is. Small
it's
farms.
Big business. It's Monsanto versus the small organic farmer. I mean, that's really what this is about.
And by the way, just one moment, a little off subject, Joe. I'm sorry for this. Is that we get mail here saying, how can you take Monsanto ads? We don't. We do not. This is an NPR thing. NPR never asks us our opinion on what they should take, and they have no shame. And they take not only that, but they also take ads for some other dubious things. I heard a liquor ad the other day, a hard liquor ad, and we don't take them.
Underwriting.
Yes.
Not ads. Underwriting.
Yes.
Underwriting. Underwritten.
Yes.
By.
I am so sorry, Libby. You have saved me once again.
It's my goal in life.
Yeah, I know that. It's all payback.
Yeah, it is. It's true.
One more story I want to get to real quick, and then we're going to I want to bring Ian Pickus in because we have a very important topic to discuss, and that's Jeopardy. Okay.
What?
But before we do the breaking story on BBC this weekend was the same-sex marriage bill comes into force in Uruguay, which is this was nearly, I guess, what, 4 months or so? They had this.
Yeah, it was quick.
It was passed.
Snap, snap.
And then it goes. So what does this mean for Latin America? What does this mean for the world? And even put it into a context of the quick movement comes, you know, as the Pope says, mm-hmm. says the word gay.
Right.
And seems to have some relationship to the concept.
Well, first, I just want to do a little shout out to Minnesota because they got it. August 1st, people were able to get married there as well, with their bill being passed and Michelle Bachmann's head exploding. I think what's happening in Uruguay and in some of the other Latin American countries is they are recognizing, as the more progressive folks in this country is recognizing, that it's not a big deal. And it's like these people pay taxes. They are business owners. They're neighbors. They're friends. They're family. It's not a big deal. Let's just make this go away. And, you know, the fact that you've got some incredibly Catholic countries doing this, coupled with what the Pope said last week, which, you know, could have knocked me over with a feather, I think that there is a change going on. There's a major sea change going on here where in 10, 20 years, everyone in the United States is going to be able to get married. And this is not going to be an issue except for maybe in places like Russia.
Libby, do you see a difference between gay marriage and abortion? Because and on the abortion, let me just explain it. On the abortion
question, it never
went away.
Right.
And it was, you know, right. God has told me if you allow this to happen, you're a murderer.
Right.
And this.
Well, the people are saying God has told me if you allow this to happen, it's Armageddon. I mean, if you allow same-sex marriage to happen, it's going to be Armageddon and all that sort of stuff. I think what's happened is that Phyllis Schlafly's son was gay. You have Ken Melman coming out.
Wasn't there something with the vice president with Cheney?
Well, Cheney's daughter is.
Well, that's
Cheney.
How he. I believe
Cheney's
it,
daughter
no, I believe
is a lesbian.
How he pronounces
yes,
it. Cheney,
and they're married.
You don't get
and,
to say Ray.
Right.
Yes.
They're married and they have kids.
Yeah.
So there's this softening within the more right wing or the GOP around this issue, where there won't be this softening around abortion because it is so black and white for people. It's insane. But
their
it
kids
is so
don't have abortions?
Are well, you me what? No, they do. But nonetheless, you know, it is the last bastion. You know, I used to think our stuff, the gay stuff, was the last bastion. But really, choice, is it's still as polarizing as it ever was, and people are still, you know, men are still trying to tell women what to do with their bodies. It's the age old thing, and they used to be together, and now we see gay rights moving forward and choice still under attack.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's sad, is what it is. Ray.
No, nothing. Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
Your body language says there's.
Well,
something.
I just wondered, is there a point now, you know, where you would say that abortion is not a good idea? At a point in the gestation of a newborn, where you say, "Gosh," or
it's between
his choice.
As far as I'm concerned, it's between a doctor and the woman, and that's it.
Okay.
Okay.
But Ray, you know, may have a point in that as we develop our. I mean, for example, let's take the morning after pill.
Okay.
So I don't mean let's.
Thankfully,
yeah, let's take it. Yeah,
but that's okay.
Want to pass them around? Breakfast, everyone.
Next up, it'll be Vicodin. So.
No, I thought it was Viagra. Yeah.
Well, okay, Viagra, then the
and
morning
then
after
Vicodin.
Pill, then the Vicodin.
You would think
by then the show will be over.
But of course, you think the pro-choice people, the anti-choice people would say, or the pro-life people, as they say, would say, you know, okay, then we have these pills, and you don't have to go get into this, but they don't.
No,
they say quite the opposite.
Yeah.
You say you're interfering with God's plan.
Right. It's all about, you know, that sex should be about procreation, not about love. And, you know, again, it's...
Or
most,
fun.
Right. Or any kind of ecstasy. But, you know, there's all...
That's another pill.
Ray, don't choke.
No, it's fine.
Because you have too much fun.
No, I got a full Danny Thomas going here.
But, you know, it's again, you know, what was I saying? I don't remember.
Oh,
but
look at the
one
time.
One would think that they would be, they're never going to be okay with anything that blocks the potential for a child being born. But once that child is born, they want to take away their food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Good. That's...
Well, that brings a full circle.
Whoops.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Throw a shoe at Alan, too, if you like.
No.
Libby, thank you very much.
Oh,
it's
Joe,
great
thank
having you.
You
here. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our news director, Ian Pickus, is going to come in. He's our Jeopardy expert. We're going to talk to him about a very important Jeopardy story in the news. We want his perspective. That coming up next, right here on the Roundtable.